Hello, this is Don on Tuesday, May 16, and I will be reading the Danville Commercial News for today's paper. The first article is about a fatal shooting that occurred in Danville, and the title of the article is Police Hope Witnesses Break Silence. The director says people were nearby when man was shot outside a house. Dateline Danville. Police are investigating a weekend shooting that left one man dead. Vermilion County Coroner Jane McFadden said the man was identified as Rodney D. Crosby, age 22, of Danville. An autopsy is scheduled for this morning. Public Safety Director Larry Thomason said police were called to the unit block of Kentucky Street about 9:30 p.m. Saturday for a report of shots fired. There's a quote. Officers arriving at the scene found an unresponsive man lying alongside his home, according to Thomason. He said the man was treated by Aero ambulance personnel and taken to Presence United Samaritan Medical Center in Danville, where he was pronounced dead at 10 p.m. A preliminary investigation shows that the victim was on a porch when a vehicle passed the residence, said Thomason. Some yelling took place from an occupant or occupants of the vehicle in the direction of the victim, and the vehicle drove on, according to Thomason, and went on to say, shortly after, there were several shots heard, and the victim was apparently struck at that time. Thomason said there were a number of people nearby when the incident occurred, and people are asking that they come forward to speak with them. The silence from those who could provide value information in solving this case is absolutely not acceptable, he said. Tragedies of this type can only be prevented when persons in the community step up and speak up. Anyone with information about this incident is asked to contact Danville Police at 217-431-2250, or, if you wish to remain anonymous, Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-TIPS. That's T-I-P-S. Here's an article about dogs helping students at Danville Area Community College. The title of the article is Danville Area Community College Goes to the Dogs. Subtitle, Furry Friends Relieve Students' Stress During Finals Week. This article is by Carol Rome, Dateline Danville. Six furry friends eagerly awaited outside the clock tower building Monday afternoon, hoping to get a pat on the head, or better yet, a tummy rub from a passing Danville Area Community College student. Six of the eight members of the local Therapy Dogs International chapter have been bringing their dogs, big and small, to the college since Friday to provide students and instructors with stress relief during finals week. Today, between 1 and 3 p.m., the dogs will be located in Mary Miller Center hallway near the fitness center, and from 10 a.m. to noon Wednesday, the dogs will be in the tech center break area where the vending machines are. Therapy Dogs International member Chris Lucas, who brought a West Highland Terrier named Sophie to Danville Area Community College, said the University of Illinois has had therapy dogs on campus during final weeks for years, but this was the first time therapy dogs have made their way to the Danville Community College. Lucas said, I called Dean of Student Services Stacy Amon and offered our services to give students comfort. And they have been very receptive, she said of the students. Some students are confused because they think they're your service dogs and aren't to be petted. But therapy dogs are meant to be petted. And therapy dogs have been stationed in the student union along with a golden retriever from Milford, who is a member of the Lutheran Comfort Dogs organization. Lucas went on to say, quote, people become more aware of therapy dogs after the Lutheran organization took their dogs to Sandy Hook. We go to schools, nursing homes, and the Veterans Administration, and we've been called to Sunset Funeral Home, end of quote. Although the Therapy Dogs International canines and their handlers moved to the Clock Tower building on Monday, a couple of students who interacted with the dogs last week sought them out so they pet the dogs some more. I love dogs, student Xavier Billot said as he petted and snapped photos of the dogs. Student John Errol said, I think it's cool, as Commander the Papillon Pomeranian mix sat on her lap. Eros said she already had completed the 4 final tests she had to take, but decided to visit the therapy dogs anyway. "I'm done with finals," she said. "I hung around today to play with the dogs." Another student, Aaron Gilpin, lowered himself to the floor to get close to Roxy, the golden retriever. "I like it," he said of interacting with the dogs. "I came here to play with the dogs." While giving Sparky the terrier mix a tummy rub, student Cindy Scott said, "It's so wonderful today. I have 2 finals, and this helps." The local Therapy Dogs International members who brought their dogs on Monday were Lucas and her Westie, Sophie, Marilyn Campbell and her collie Hannah, Paul Hurst and her golden retriever Roxy, Vanna Bly and her terrier mix Sparky, and Mary Jane Easterday and her Sheltie, Cody and her Papillon Pomeranian mix. Or the other dogs that were brought to the students this week. Here's an article about a man hit by a car during a dispute, Dateline Danville. A 26-year-old Danville man was hospitalized Friday night after being struck by a vehicle driven by a woman involved in a domestic dispute. According to accident reports at the public safety building, officers responded to a vehicle versus pedestrian accident shortly after 10 p.m. Friday in the 900 block of Holiday Drive. Upon arrival, the officers found multiple vehicles with severe body damage and a man lying on the ground with an open fracture wound. A police officer on scene attended to the victim, later identified as Anthony M. Brown, until pro-ambulance personnel arrived. Brown was conscious but unable to speak due to the amount of pain that he was in. Brown's mother, identified as Tanisha D. Williams, had witnessed the incident. She stated to the officers that her son's ex-girlfriend, later identified as 20-year-old Tamara D. Oraham, had sped past their residence multiple times, yelling profanity, she said, in the past 3 or 4 hours prior to this incident. Just before the incident occurred, the report stated Brown was leaning against a parked car near his brother, Carnell A. Williams, when Graham sped past and stopped at the stop sign at Crestview Avenue. Tanisha Williams then observed Graham's reverse lights come, heard an engine rev up, and accelerate backward at a high level of speed. Tanisha advised that the vehicle struck a parked vehicle, then struck Anthony, throwing him approximately 5 to 10 feet to the north, then struck Anthony's vehicle, and finally spinning around so that the front of Tamara's vehicle was facing to the west and stopping, according to the report. Tanisha said Tamara got out of the driver's seat and ran eastbound on Holiday and north on Crestview while talking on a phone. The report added Tanisha Williams believed Graham intended to hit Carnell Williams with the vehicle, but Carnell was about it to move out of the way and to avoid being struck. Carnell told officers the same and that Graham was mad at him for breaking up with her. A Vermilion County deputy sheriff was called in an attempt to track the suspect with a K-9 unit, but the track was unsuccessful. According to the report, Brown suffered a broken right femur, a broken left tibia, and a broken left fibula, in addition to unknown internal injuries. Brown was initially taken to Presence United Samaritans Medical Center in Danville by pro-ambulance and later transferred to Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Jamie Lang, public relations coordinator with Carle, said Monday that Brown was in good condition. At the time of the report, Graham had not been located. She was last observed Friday wearing a long, dark top and pants with slits in them. As of Monday, she had not been taken into custody. She was charged with aggravated battery, aggravated reckless driving, reckless conduct, leaving the scene of an accident involving injury, failure to report an accident to police authority, failure to provide aid or information after an accident, failure to reduce speed to avoid an accident, operating an uninsured vehicle, and improper backing. Well, that concludes that article. That certainly is a long list of charges for that suspect when she is found. I'm going to turn now to the obituaries in the Danville News for today. The first is for Rodney Crosby, age 22, of Danville, who died at 10:01 p.m. Saturday, May 13, at Presence United Samaritan Center, Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leek & Sons Funeral Home, 304 East William Street, Danville. Vivian Fair, Cisna Park. Vivian E. Fair, age 81, of Cisna Park, passed away on Monday, May 15, 2017, at Heritage Heath in Hoopston. Funeral services will be at 10:30 a.m. Friday, May 19, at the Cisna Park United Methodist Church. The Reverend Molly Spence Hawk will officiate. Burial will be in the Cisna Park Cemetery. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. Thursday at Knapp Funeral Home in Cisna Park and 1 hour prior to the service at the church. Memorials may be made to the Cisna Park United Methodist Church or Heritage Health in Hoopston. The next is for Myra Flick, age 87, of Danville, who died at 9:25 a.m. Saturday, May 13, at home. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Thursday at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street, Danville, with Drew Mentzer officiating. Burial will be in the Sunset Memorial Park, Danville. Visitation will be 9 to 10 a.m. Thursday at the funeral home. The next obituary is for Antajasia Ty Franklin. Antajasia Ty Franklin, age 8, of Danville, died at 9:15 a.m. Thursday, May 11, 2017, at home. Viewing will be from 1 to 5 p.m. Wednesday at Leek & Sons Funeral Home, 304 East William Street, Danville. Visitation will begin at 11 a.m. Thursday at New Life Church of Faith, 1419 North Bowman Avenue, Danville, with funeral services beginning at noon. Pastor Bobby Key Sr. will officiate. Burial will be in Spring Hill Cemetery, Danville. The next obituary is for Diane Lane of Hoopston. Diane Lane, 53, of Hoopston, died at 10:55 a.m. Thursday, May 11, 2017, at home. Memorial services will be at noon Wednesday at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street, Hoopston. Visitation will be from 11:30 to noon Wednesday at the funeral home. The next obituary is for Joyce Elizabeth Roche. Joyce Elizabeth Roche, age 93, of Danville, went home to be with the Lord on Wednesday, May 10, 2017, at Carl Hospital in Urbana. Visitation was 10 to 11 a.m. Monday, May 15, at the Church of the Holy Trinity, 308 North Vermilion in Danville, and Mass followed at 11 a.m. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made in Joyce's name to the Church of the Holy Trinity, 308 North Vermilion Street, Danville, 61832. The next obituary is for Marva Louise Tools. Mrs. Marva Louise Tools of Danville gained her heavenly wings on Monday, May 8, 2017. A celebration of her life will be held on Wednesday, May 17, at Greater Shiloh Missionary Baptist Church, 609 North Bowman Avenue in Danville. Visitation will start at 11 a.m. Until the start of the service at 12 noon, her pastor, Reverend U. Pete Williams, will be officiating. Interment will be at Spring Hill Cemetery. That concludes the obituaries for today. Here's a rundown of the local sports, high school sports. The first is the Hilltoppers win a playoff opener, Danville. The Schlarman baseball team had a strong start to the postseason on Monday with a 20-6 win over Armstrong Potomac in an IHSA Class 1A regional game at Danville Stadium. The Hilltoppers will move on to play Oakwood on Wednesday at Fisher. In another game at Georgetown Ridge Farm, the Georgetown Ridge Farm Buffaloes were down 3-0 going into the bottom of the fifth, but they scored 4 runs in the fifth and 3 in the sixth to turn away Casey Westfield in an IHSA Class 2 regional. The Buffaloes will take on Tuscola on Wednesday in a semifinal game. The Westville Tigers took a 1-0 lead and added 5 more runs in the fifth to beat Marshall in a 1IHSA Class 2 regional. The Tigers will play Paris on Wednesday in semifinal action. And then Covington. The Covington Trojans had 14 hits as they beat the North Vermilion Falcons in 5 innings. Both teams will play each other again today. And in prep softball, we have Westville 21, St. Thomas More 0. And the Westville Tigers will play seeded St. Joseph Ogden today. And then at Milford, the Milford team beat Paxton Buckley Loda by a score of 7-0. The Milford Bearcats' record is 14-16, and they will face number 2 seed Unity today at Hoopston. In another softball game, the Salt Fork was 3, Bismarck Henning 1. And the Salt Fork team is 17-6 and will play Oakwood today at Blue Ridge in regional action, while the Blue Devils are 10-12 and will play Georgetown Ridge Farm Chrisman on Wednesday for regional action. More softball. The Watseka Cornjerkers scored 2 runs in the top of the 7th, but could not tie things up against the Watseka Warriors. So the Watseka won 3-2. And we'll play again on Wednesday against Villa Grove Heritage. More softball. Donovan Hilltoppers and the Schlarman Hilltopper season ended in a Class 1A regional game against Donovan, who won 17-7. The Covington Trojans rallied from an early 4-0 deficit to beat the North Vermilion Falcons on the road, and the Trojans will host the Falcons again today. Over on the opinion page in today's paper is an opinion expressed by Patrick Buchanan, a syndicated columnist. He's asking the question, what is America's goal in the world? For the World War II generation, there was clarity. The attack on Pearl Harbor, December 7, 1941, united the nation as it had never been before, in the conviction that Japan must be smashed no matter how long it took or how many lives it cost. After the defeat of the Axis powers in 1945, however, Americans divided. Only with the Berlin blockade of 1948, the fall of China to Mao, and Russia's explosion of an atomic bomb in 1949, and North Korea's invasion of the South in 1950, did we unite around the proposition that for our own security, we had to go back to Europe and Asia. What was called the Cold War consensus, that only America could contain Stalin's empire, led to NATO and new U.S. alliances from the Elbe River to the East China Sea. Vietnam, however, shattered the Cold War consensus. The far left of the Democratic Party that had taken us into Vietnam had repudiated the war by 1968 and switched sides to sympathize with such third world communists as Fidel Castro, Che Guevara, Ho Chi Minh, and the Sandinistas. Center-right presidents John F. Kennedy, Nixon, Reagan accepted the need to cooperate with dictators who would side with us in fighting communism, and we did. Park Chung-hee in Korea, the Shah in Iran, President Diem in Saigon, General Franco in Spain, Somoza in Nicaragua, General Mobutu in the Congo, General Pinochet in Chile, Ferdinand Marcos in Manila, the list goes on. Under Reagan, the Soviet Empire finally fell apart, and the USSR was designated in one of the epochal events of history. I meant to say the USSR then disintegrated in one of the epochal events of history. The American century had ended in America's triumph. Yet, after 1989, no new national consensus emerged over what ought to be our role in the world. What would we stand for? What should we fight for? What D. Acheson had said of our cousins in 1962, Great Britain has lost an empire and has not yet found a role, was now true of us. What was our role in the world now that the Cold War was history? George H.W. Bush took us to war to drive Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait. Soaring to 90% approval, he declared America's new role was to construct a new world order. Those who opposed him, Bush acidly dismissed in Hawaii on December 7, 1991, the 50th anniversary of Pearl Harbor, when President Bush said, quote, "We stand here today on the side of a tragedy spawned by isolationism, and it is here we must learn, and this time avoid, the dangers of today's isolationism and its accomplice, protectionism," end of quote. Neither Bush nor his New World Order survived the next November. Then came payback for our sanctions that had brought death to thousands of Iraqis and for the U.S. bases we had foolishly planted on the sacred soil of Saudi Arabia. September 11, 2001. George W. Bush reacted by launching the two longest wars in our history in Afghanistan and Iraq and announced that our new role was to, quote, "end tyranny in the world," end of quote. The Bush II crusade for global democracy also fizzled out. Barack Obama tried to extricate us from Afghanistan and Iraq, but he too failed and got us into wars in Yemen and Syria, and then started his own war in Libya, producing yet another failed. What does the balance sheet of post-Cold War interventions look like? Since 1991, we've lost our global preeminence, quadrupled our national debt, and gotten ourselves mired in five Mideast wars, with the neocons clamoring for a sixth with Iran. With the new world order and global democracy having been abandoned as America's great goals, what is the new goal of U.S. foreign policy? What is the strategy to achieve it? Does anyone know? Globalists say we should stand for a rules-based world order. Not exactly remember the Alamo or remember Pearl Harbor. A quarter century after the Cold War, we remain committed to 60-year-old Cold War alliances to defend scores of nations on the other side of the world. Consider some of the places where America collides today with nuclear powers: the DMZ, the Senkaukas, Scarborough Shoal, Crimea, the Donbass. What is vital to us in any of these venues to justify sending an American army to fight or risking a nuclear war? We have lost control of our destiny. We have lost the freedom of our founding fathers implored us to maintain, the freedom to stay out of wars of foreign countries on faraway continents. Like the British and French empires, the American imperium is not sustainable. We have issued so many war guarantees, it is almost assured that we will be dragged into every future great crisis and conflict on the planet. If we do not review and discard some of these war guarantees, we shall never know peace. Donald Trump once seemed to undertake this. Does he still? And that's the article and opinion by columnist Patrick Buchanan for today. An op-ed piece that comes from Ron Gore, a Covington, Indiana resident and former Commercial News newsboy and scholarship recipient. The title for this article is "Give Mothers Tools to Help Children Succeed." An article reprinted May 2 in the Danville Commercial News indicated that child abuse could be reduced if people would just say something if they saw something. The strategy of "see something, say something" regarding child abuse, and for that matter, crime or other antisocial behavior, has two glaring flaws. In order to see the abuse of the criminal act, it has already occurred. That is, a child has already been hurt, or the criminal act is in progress. The second flaw is that fear often prevents witnesses from actually saying something. For instance, Mayor Scott Eisenhower recently stated one reason for crime in Danville is, quote, "the public will not report something when they see it," end of quote. The strategy of "see something, say something," in essence, allows agencies to sit back until someone says something, and likely means that no preventive plan exists to deal with the issue. For instance, I agree with Eric Felix, who at a recent city council meeting reportedly questioned Danville's plan to curb crime by setting new curfew rules and having firemen monitor the parks. Mr. Felix properly noted the likely ineffectiveness of this plan and suggested a need to get into the trenches to solve crime. Crime, drug abuse, child abuse, spousal abuse, urination in public places, bullying and fights in our schools, disrespect for police, teen pregnancy, and many other of today's problems have a common source, the way in which perpetrators were treated as children. One might say antisocial behavior starts in the mother's womb. If raised in a way that a child has a normal ability to learn, that child has a good chance of being successful in school, find a decent job, and have a good life. On the other hand, if the child has a limited ability to learn, school becomes a nightmare, the child often becomes bitter, may leave school early, and is more likely to become involved with antisocial behavior. Considerable research since the 1990s indicates that children's brain development is greatest in the child's first year, and brain development declines progressively to age 4. Research also shows 3 essential ingredients are needed in this early period of life: love and touch, needed for memory development; words heard from family and positive reinforcement. See the National Geographic magazine of January 15 issue, for instance. Strangely, most social services and school districts do not apply this research to their programs. Therefore, antisocial behavior and poverty continue with little change since 1960. If I had authority to do so, such as a leader of Child Protective Services or Vermilion County Health Department, I would offer $50 or more to every new mother to spend on an hour answering questions about their life, as well as check the new parent's criminal record. For instance, does she live with the baby's father? Has he ever hit her? Who will care for the child? And so on. In other words, a risk-based assessment pertinent to future development of her new infant. At that initial contact, I would furnish all mothers with the research information and recordings of sentences mom could easily say to the baby, baby songs and nursery rhymes, things helping mom provide her child with the 3 essential ingredients. I would maintain some contact with those most at risk for 4 years. You get the idea. Better yet, it would be good for all of Danville's social agencies, city council, school board, etc., to meet and coordinate in such a plan. How hard will that be? While others may have better ideas, this is a plan that gets us into the trenches. And here's an editorial urging you all to cheer on the Lady Jaguars. Members of the Danville Area Community College softball team will head south this week, but it's not on some kind of delayed spring break. In fact, it won't be a break at all, as they travel to Clinton, Mississippi, to compete in the National Junior College Athletic Association Division II National Championship Tournament. The squad captured its division title last week with back-to-back wins against Coffey College. The wins capped a 34-16 season for the Lady Jaguars and launched this team into its first national tournament. The success comes after the team had to cancel its 2013 season due to a lack of players. This year's team features several area players from Illinois and Indiana, as well as members from Alabama, Texas, Wisconsin, and Tennessee. Coach Matt Cervantes told the Commercial News last week, quote, "It's amazing because of where we started with this program 3 years ago. I got the job in August, and we had 6 players, and we needed a fall season. We did that and had 1 win that season. We brought in a good freshman class and some good sophomores, and we won 13. So this is our first real squad, and at 24-10, that is amazing. It's exciting when you can wake up every day and see these girls ready to compete." End of quote. Information on when or what the team the Lady Jaguars would face was not available Monday at the Division II softball website. But when and who plays doesn't matter. Members of the Lady Jaguars already proved themselves to be champions during the course of their season. Join us in offering congratulations to the Lady Jaguars and help them cheer them on to a national title. Well, that concludes that editorial. It concludes my reading of the Commercial News for today, Tuesday, May 16. I look forward to reading for you again in the future. Goodbye for now.